Haya Valad Mishum Chamisha Dvarim. So our parak begins with Hachovel, the halachos of one person injuring, hitting another person. Before beginning, it's actually worthwhile to note the placement of the Rambam. The Rambam begins Mishnah Torah with Mishnah Torah Hilchos Sefer Nezikin with Hilchos Nizke Mamon. Then he has Gneva Gzela, and then Chovel Umazik. So, what's the difference between Chovel Umazik versus Nizke Mamon? Nizke Mamon is basically the halachos of Mamon Amazik, meaning to say, when my property causes damage to something else, and that's why the Arba Mitzvos are Shur, Haver, Bor, and Havara, which are all cases where the Torah says, my Mamon is Mazik, somebody else, and yet I'm Chayav. The Rambam is, we'll see, actually, if you look at the Psukim following the Torah's order, but also the Seder Maseches Bava Kama, which begins with the Arbavos Nezikin and Hilchos Nizkei Mamon. And then we have Gnev and Gzela, which are also actually following the order of Bava Kama to some degree, like Perek Meruba. And we get to Hilchos Chovel Umazik. So Chovel Umazik, as the name indicates, actually is comprised of two different things. Number one is Chovel. Number two is Mazik. Chovel means that I injure another person, and Mazik means I injure another person's mamon. So if we were to rename the Sefer, we would say Hilchos Adam HaMazik. And if we were to rename the first group of halachos, Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, would be Hilchos Mamon HaMazik, because that's what we have. The first Hilchos Nizkei Mamon is Hilchos Mamon HaMazik, and Hilchos Chovel HaMazik is Adam HaMazik. And then Adam HaMazik is divided up into two parts. One is Chovel, and two is Mazik. So, Prakim Aleph through, I think, Zion are Hilchos Chovel, and then Zion till the end is Mazik, right? Zion begins with HaMazik Mamon Chavero. With respect to Chovel, Hilchos Chovel, now what's interesting is the Rambam thinks that both is kolo both of these dinim in one group of halachos, and kedarko shel Rambam, that's a reflection of their being combined together in the Torah in a certain sense. As he begins the Sefer in the Koteret, Mitzvah Sase Achas, Vehi Din Chovel B'Chavero, O Mazik Mimono. Right? That is one din in Sefer HaMitzvos. It's kolo both. There's two categories. There's when I punch you and when I punch your property, but they are linked in the Sukkim and in the Dinim. Now, happens to be that with respect to the Isser, when people start learning Bava Kama, one of the first things everybody asks at the beginning is there a lav? And there's different opinions, perhaps different sources in the Rishonim, whether when we're talking about Mamon HaMazik, is there a lav? After the Chakamocha, this, that. When it comes to Chova, we know there's a lav, right? The lav is Pen Yosef. And the Rambam writes this explicitly at the beginning of Perek Hey. If I, it's usher to punch you, and if I punch you, I am over on the lav of Pen Yosef, and if I punch you and I cause damage less than the value of a Shavapruta, then I get Malkos. If it's more than a Shavapruta, I don't get Malkos. Why? Because in Aloka Mashalim, less than a Shavapruta, I do get Malkos. The Rambam didn't mention that lav over here is because he mentioned it in Hilchos Sanhedrin. That's really where it belongs, where the pasuk appears. You have to give Malkos, lo Yosef. You may not give more than 39 lashes. You may not give more Malkos than the person deserves. But from there, we extrapolate a din that's relevant over here in Hilchos Chovel HaMazik, namely, any time I hit somebody undeserving, I'm in violation of this law. If somebody's deserving to be hit by Beis Din, and you give him extra makos, you're over kal v'chomer, someone totally undeserving. Now, an interesting thing to think about is whether the tashlumin of chamisha dvarim have anything to do with the lav. Pashtus is they don't. First of all, you see that in the presentation of the Rambam, who doesn't bring the lav into Perek Hay. Moreover, it's likely that there'll be cases that you chayev, but you're not over on the lav. For example, if I, Gemara's going to say later on, that if you lock someone in a room, you're chayev to pay sheves, because they miss work. According to Tosfos, that's only if you actually push them into the room and lock them there. But one way or the other, Rambam the Pashta says he doesn't even need that. So I lock you up in your house, right? So I haven't been over on the lav of Pen Yosef. I didn't even touch you, right? You're chayev to pay boshes if you spit on the person's body. I don't think you're over on the lav of Pen Yosef. So the tashlumin are not associated with the lav. And again, that's the presentation of the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't talk about the lav until you get to Perek Hay. But it happens to be that, generally speaking at least, chovo b'chaveiro does incur a direct lav. Okay, so that's a hakdama.
But if you assume that it's a kofar, then doesn't at least Nezek shouldn't have something to do with the lav?
Not necessarily. You could have a onesh without formally violating a lav. Maybe yes, maybe no. When you're mefata someone, so there's a knas. I don't think the knas has anything to do with...
But that's different. The kofar...
No, so that's the point. In other words, the Rambam, we're going to get to the Rambam here. Jumping ahead, we're going to talk about what the nature of this is. A kofar, is it onesh or the like? But the fact that... And what you're suggesting is an interesting point, which is if we're going to see certain tashlume chamisha dvarim, or maybe three out of the five things for the Rambam is begeder onesh or kofar, the like... Does kofar need a lav, right? And you're saying maybe it does. So I'm saying I could show you it doesn't. The haraya that there are cases where you're going to pay from the chamisha dvarim, and even so you say, well, there's no raya from my first example of locking the guy in a room. Shavas is certainly mamon, according to the Rambam. It's not kofar, it's not knas, it's not onesh. But let's say from the case of spitting, right?
So I'm assuming, but meaning you would say that about, meaning, if the Rambam is getting it from our Gemara, then you would say it about Nezek. You wouldn't necessarily say it about the other things.
Yeah, but the Rambam does say it. The Rambam says, again, we're jumping ahead, but the Rambam says that Nezek, Tsar, and Boshes are all begeder kenas, whatever that means, not just Nezek. So, unless you're going to say, now, you could say, Avada, anytime I embarrass someone, bemezid. You're only chayv for Boshes if you do a bemezid, right? And Avada, that's Aser, right? So the Iser might not be Pen Yosef. The Iser is... Losisna. Certainly against the Torah, right? You're violating the Torah if you spit at somebody, even if you're not technically speaking in violation of Pen Yosef. So even if you're going to make your assumption that for there to be some type of kenas, there has to be an aveira, I'll tell you avada that there was an aveira. Certainly was an aveira. And in terms of locking in the room, it's also an aveira, but happens to be that case anyway, isn't a case. So that's sheves. That's certainly mamon. Okay. Good. So let's begin the Mishnah. Hachovel b'chaveiro chayev alav mishum chamisha dvarim. It's interesting if that lashon is significant. It doesn't say mishalem chamisha dvarim. Might that indicate that this isn't just straightforward tashlumen, perhaps? Benezek, Betsar, Beripoy, Beshaves, Uvoshes. Benezek, Ketzad. How do you calculate Nezek? Simas Eno, Kiteas Yado, Shiberes Raglo, Roanoso Kilu Aved, Nimkar Beshuk, Beshamin Kamaya Yafa, Vekamo Yafa. So we assess the differential in value with respect to the value on the slave market, the difference between what he would originally be sold at and what he's sold at now. Says Rashi, Bekama hu yafe, Sharei ziko, Vifsido mamon ze, Sheim haya nitzrach, haya mocher atzmo beved ivri. So Rashi is fascinating. It's interesting, first of all, Rashi notes, uses the word Eved Ivri, which really is going to cause the Nizak to lose out tremendously. Why? Let's imagine the Mazik chops off the hand of the Nizak. So his... this is going to affect his lifetime future earnings, right? Lifetime future earnings. He is missing a hand. Now, how long could an Eved Ivri be sold for? 6 years. So he's basically only going to be compensated for his devaluation of 6 years, right? In reality, let's say he originally, he originally would have been, let's imagine he pitches for the Yankees. His right hand, so I don't know. Originally he would have been sold for $40 million. And now he goes down to, for a 6 year contract, right? So is that what pitchers get these days? A good pitcher. $40 million for 6 years. So now he's going to go down to, $200,000. Because what's he going to do without a right hand? He'll work as a cashier, maybe, or substitute teacher, because at least he's a former pitcher. He could get some money that way. Right? So 39. So what's Nezek going to be? It's going to be $39 million, $39.8 million. But that's it. Now, the truth is that after a six-year contract would have run out, if he still had his hand, he could pitch for another 6 years, so maybe he wouldn't be getting $40 million. He'll get $35 million. He's already an older pitcher, right? That he's lost out on all that, and for Kol Shekhen the rest of his life. It's totally unfair that we are using the shuma of an Eved Ivri. So Rush, if you take a look here, he disagrees. You're right. Doesn't make any sense. We're going to do the Shuma of an Eved Kanani. And it wouldn't really make sense to do 6 years plus 6 years plus 6 years for the rest of his life. How are you going to figure that out? How long are you going to know he's going to live? Okay, maybe you could say do Shuma for that. But at that point, just do Shuma of an Eved Kanani. Right? So that's what the Rush is. The Rush is you would do the Shuma of an Eved Kanani. So in this case, what would this guy be as an Eved Kanani? He's going to be where the Eved Kanani is forever. So what's he going to be worth as an Eved Kanani? This guy, so it's going to be $40 million plus $35 million plus, $500,000 for the rest of his life. So he's going to get over $75 million. Much more than Rashi. What's Pshat in Rashi? Why? Rashi doesn't seem to make any sense. Why Eved Ivri? So Rashi answers the question. Rashi tells you very clearly what the question is. Let's read Rashi again. Sharei hiziko v'hipshido mamon zeh shem haya nitzrach haya mocher atmo beved ivri. Rashi's telling you that the tashlume nezek are because of the hefsid mamon that the nizak incurred. Because, but he even tells you a story. Shem haya nitzrach, let's say he got poor, right? Let's say he got poor. So what would he do? When he still had a right hand, so he could sell himself as an Eved, he had that Zechus Mamon, and now he's lost that, so you're compensating him for a loss. What loss? The loss of the ability to sell himself as an Eved. And that is a real loss. Right? He could have done it. It's a Zechus Mamon that he had. He could have made this money if he wanted it. And it's true, you know, he probably wouldn't have, so most people don't go around selling themselves, but he could have, and it's real, right? Rashi says, Shimaya Nitzrach. Rashi's telling you a story. Yeah, talk of this, what happens? People sometimes lose their money, and they get desperate, and they sell themselves. Parshas Mishmatim. So now, could this guy, he's Jewish, right? Ramesh is talking about a Jew. So could he sell himself as an Eved Kanani? No, he couldn't. Could he sell himself litzmisus forever? No. If he wanted to, after 6 years, he could stay until Yovel. He doesn't get more money. So Rashi tells you why it's Eved Ivri. Because the Tashlumin of Nezek, according to Rashi, is compensation for the money that you could have earned selling yourself as an Eved, had you, and now you can't. And Rashi says, if you needed to, because it has to be real, right? It has to be real. You could have had that opportunity. And why not Eved Kanani? Because it's not true. I can't sell myself as an Eved Kanani. So I can't charge you for taking away my right to sell my ability to sell myself as an Eved Kanani, because I have no right, I have no ability to sell myself as an Eved Kanani. It's not something I can do. It's like saying, you should pay me Cheves, because if I wanted to, I could pitch for the Yankees, right? I can't. They wouldn't hire me. So you can't say, pay me because I could have sold myself as an Eved Kanani. I can't. Can't sell myself as an Eved Kanani. You'll tell me it's unfair. It is unfair, right? But you can't. This is not payment that you could fairly demand from the mazik. That's why Rashi doesn't say like the Rashi. Right. Now, Lamashal, it's just like to bring it out. Enough gamina, right? What would be bizman hazeh? We'll talk about whether the issue of shlichusayu later. Could you collect? Well, in Eretz Yisrael, let's imagine they reestablish smicha. And now, according to Rashi, would I get any nezek? Or not? Am I a nitzvah? I am mocher atzmo. There's no market for neved ivri. If I put myself on the market today, I will get zero. Okay? Maybe there's a black market, I don't know. There's no market for neved ivri. It doesn't exist. There's no neved ivri market. Even if they resuscitate smicha, I still imagine there won't be, but who knows? But not right now, there's no. So according to Rush, you get zero. What would the Rush say? The Rush would say, yeah, well, imagine what you would get if you were sold as an Eved Kanani. It doesn't have to be realistic, because anyway, you can't sell yourself as an Eved Kanani. You're not a Kanani, you're an Ivri. So it's a tool we're using to assess damage. Not that you could sell yourself for an Eved Kanani, but we use this tool. What's the tool? We need to monetize the damage that I caused you. So when I punch this guy's arm and I cause him permanent damage, we have to figure out some way to monetize it. And the way to monetize it is by imagining, by assessing the value as indicated by the slave market for Eved Kanani. So we would, you know, we could try to do the same thing nowadays. I don't know how we would do it. That's why they have a forensic economists. But fundamentally, as opposed to Rashi. Oh. Now, so according to Rashi, Nezek, if we go back to point you only brought up, what is Nezek? So, well, we'll get to the Rambam soon enough, but since Yoni mentioned it, so Rambam, Yoni mentioned the Rambam learned that that Nezek is kofar, it's some type of kenas or the like. We'll figure out the exact formulation in the Rambam. Which one is it? Is it Nezek? He calls it, is it kenas? He calls it kenas in one place, he calls it kofar in another place. It's not like regular kenas. We'll work on Shitas Rambam shortly, b'siyata d'shmaya. But it's some type of onesh, let's assume. For Rashi, clearly it's not. For Rashi, it's a compensation for a loss, an actual tangible loss you caused a person. You've taken away his ability to sell himself. Now, hey, maybe you'd say, you could have argued without the Torah that this would be grama. You don't have to pay for this type of loss. My taking away your ability, should you need to sell yourself as an eved, to sell yourself as an eved, fine. You could try to make that claim for the Rambam. I mean, for Rashi, okay, the Gzeres HaKasher, Ayin Tach Zayin says they have to pay for this, even though it might have otherwise been seen as grama. What about for the Rush? Does the Rush hold Onesh? That's why he says Eved Kanani. So it could be, or it could not be. Could be the pshat is that there's really three options. There is tashlumin, which is the way Rashi learns it. I'm compensating you for the loss of value that I caused. There is, on the other extreme, onesh, as we'll see in Shitas HaRambam. And then, what the Rush is saying is, could be onesh, it could be tashlumin, but if we were to say it's tashlumin, the point is that I'm compensating you for the loss that I caused you, and this is a substitute for the loss. This is a substitute for the loss. In other words, we need to figure out how to monetize the value of your lost hand. And the way we do it, I did cause you a loss. I cut off your hand. Well, how are we going to monetize that? We're going to use the Eved Kanani market to do that. That's the most efficient way to monetize it. It's not because... Now, the Torah was mechadesh, again, even within Rashi, I might not have known this without the Torah saying Ayin Tach HaZayin. It's going to be true for Rambam, Rashi, and Rush. I wouldn't have known that. But the question is, what's the Torah teaching me? For Rashi, it's in a sense a small mechadesh. The Torah says, I have to compensate you for your inability to now to sell yourself as an Eved Ivri for X amount of money, because I've taken that away from you. For the Rush, we're going to say no. It's Tashlumin. The Torah says, I have to give Tashlumin for the hand that I took away from you. And now, how are we going to monetize that? How do we figure out what it's worth? We'll figure out what it's worth by using the slave market as a substitute to figure out value. And then finally, for the Rambam, now the Rambam might, in a sense, be much more similar to Rashi. Right? The Rambam might say, we're going to have to get back to this, but the Rambam might say, actually, Rashi's right, and he's even more than right. You see, why isn't Nezek Mamon? Well, am I really on the market for being an Eved? Whether it's Eved Ivri or Eved Kanani. You know, when I go ahead and I write my asset sheet, so I'm supposed to write down all of my assets. So I write down my car, if I own a house, if I don't, or furniture, all my assets, my stocks, my bonds, right? Would I put myself on my asset sheet? I probably wouldn't, right? And that's true even in a world where I could theoretically sell myself as an Eved Ivri. It's not an asset. So you can't say it damaged the asset. In other words, nezek for a ben chayrin doesn't even make any sense. So it has to be an onesh. Now we'll see. That's not really what's motivating the Rambam. The psukim are motivating the Rambam, but that's true. And we'll see, I think that does play a big role in understanding the Rambam. But I think it makes sense perhaps to see the Gemara before we get to that Rambam. Yeah.
So, but the Gemara seems to not have a problem, quote unquote, playing in between, assuming that the punishment is mamish and the punishment is mamon. I mean, the Gemara even at the end says that you would have, without a second pasuk, have thought that you would have had the choice of what to do. So, how would you be able to understand that nesek is a tashlumin? Because you're not paying the nesek anything by, you know, cutting your hand off.
That's a good question. We're gonna, when we read the Gemara, we'll try to figure out how Rashi read the Gemara.
Meaning, and also just to...
But, the question is, if you wish, you know, what you're saying is that the Rambam reads very nicely with the Gemara, because the Gemara says that, at least in the first source, we're going to have five or six other sources, but at least in the first source, the anonymous brisa that the Gemara brings originally, so it sounds like the Iker Makor is that it's Kofar, and then the Gemara's Mosif that, but if it was just kofar, you'd think you have an option, kamash malan hakaka, that it has to be mamon, right? So you're saying, oh, that's great. In other words, the makor really is, in the end of the day, that it's onesh, that it's kofar. Now, you know, it was originally, maybe, it's sort of interesting, you know, we originally, hakaka would presumably indicate it's mamon, and kofar is... But, you know, really the Gemara is not Lachrach. First of all, there are other Makoros. Second of all, you could say that Kamash Malan, once the bottom line is Hakaka, we accept that Zereshava as one that defines this Tashlumen, so that shows it's Tashlumen. Because Hakaka, we're comparing it to Makabehima. Makabehima is clearly Tashlumen. So Hakaka teaches me that this is Tashlumen. If we didn't have Hakaka and we were just learning it out from Kofar, then maybe you're right. It would be Kofar, it would be Onesh. And you have a choice if you want to pay Kofar good, and if not, then you could get your hand chopped off, and both options would basically be Onesh. But once we have Hakaka, so that teaches me, no, that the nature of this Tashlumen is Mamon.
I mean, I don't understand what it has to do with Kofar.
Now, yeah,
being the fundamental limud, meaning if you took, in the Hanukkah of the Gemara, if you assume that ayin tachas ayin is literal, it can't be a tashlum, right? It doesn't make any sense.
Correct. Now, once we say it's mamo, now what's the pshat?
So you could say that we're reverting entirely and assuming it's not an onesh and we're assuming it's a tashlum.
The haraya, the ultimate makor is hakaka, and we're comparing it to tashlumei behema, and by tashlumei behema is mamo. Right? So the Gemara is not mochrach. You can read the Gemara both ways.
And when the Gemara says at the end that I need both psukim because I would have had some kind of havamina, that you would have had the choice, the implication of you would have had the choice...
And that, until that point, if you didn't have akaka, I would say it's an omesh. It's kofar. Kamash malan akaka,
yeah,
that it's tashlumin. It enters the world of tashlumin, like behema, in the world of tashlumin.
And then, the Gemara, like, that... The havamina that the Gemara entails at the very end is completely rejected.
Absolutely. I think it's definitely a plausible reading, right? So we'll get to the Gemara. But for the Gemara itself, it's not... One other ha'ara on this Rashi is that Rashi does here say Avet Ivri. Now, the problem is... Oh, we're not going to get to this till probably Tuesday. If you look at Rashi on Pei Dalet Amud Beis, Ima Maschil Upegam... He writes Shifcha. There Rashi seems to have changed his mind and says we look at a Shifcha Kananis or an Eved Kanani, presumably the same. So how do you deal with that? So we're not going to answer that right now. But it's worthwhile to note that even Rashi might not stick with this approach that we've been saying in Rashi. And in fact... perhaps there's a Gemara in Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, which we'll get to tomorrow, Be'ezras Hashem, which causes Rashi to flip. and maybe see things like the rush. Okay, continuing in the Mishnah. Tsar, kiva o bishvod o bimasmer, vafilu al tziporno, makom sheina osachabura, omdim kama adam kiyote vizeh, lo tzalito lios mitzdarkach. So, we choose this example because this is an example where all there is tsar. In this example, you haven't made a chabura, there's no nezek, right? He's not devalued just because his nail got burnt. There's no ripoy, you know, you don't need to go to a doctor for a burnt nail, fingernail. There's no lost work. There's no boshes. There's just tsar. It's very painful, but that's it. So that's why we choose this example. Now, Rashi writes, "B'masmer ke'ev hamaka kiyote b'zeh lefi mashahu me'unag rav tsaro uke'evo." So, what does it mean, kiyote b'zeh? Adam kiyote b'zeh. How much would a person like this so what does like this mean? What's significant? A person like this, who cares that he's like this? And so Rashi says, very simple. A pampered person experiences much more pain, right? If than a person who's not mu'unag. So the Torah says that you have to pay based off of the pain that he experiences. Now, the Gemara is going to say, figure out exactly how you calculate this. We'll leave that for now. But if you look at the Rambam, there is an interesting difference between Rashi, seemingly a machlokas. Rambam writes, it's Perek Beis, Halacha Tes, Kama hu atzar, hakol lefi hanizak. Yesh adam shurav rach ve'anug biyoser. There are some people that are very soft and delicate. Uval mamon. Ve'ilu nasnu lo mamon harvei, lo yam etzar me'at. Ve'yesh adam shu amel v'chazak ve'ani, so Rambam here is saying the same thing as Rashi, explaining the same thing, explaining the Kiyote Bo, the Kiyote Bizeh. But what did the Rambam have that Rashi didn't have? Mama, exactly. And Rambam makes a lot of sense. What's Rambam saying? There's really two factors in terms of figuring out Kama Adam Rotza Lito Leos Mitzdarka. Number one is how much pain he experiences, right? So a pampered person will, you know, pay more money, a soft person will pay more money not to experience the pain than someone who's a tough, strong person. But also it depends on how much money he has. In other words, a really rich person, let's say two people are equally pampered, but someone who is a millionaire will be willing to pay a lot of money not to get tricked. Someone who's experiences a lot of pain, but he's very poor, well, won't pay so much money, right? So the Rambam is really much more pashut. He basically says kiyote b'zeh means two factors. One is how soft and delicate is the person, and number two is how wealthy is the person, and both of those factors combine to tell us exactly how much tsar should be. So the question on Rashi is, why does he leave it out? So maybe Rashi's actually very, very fascinating, because this really gets to the question of what are we seeking to compensate? You see, if we say that the Dmei Tsar is payment for how much pain you experience, so there's no difference between the wealthy person and the poor person here. That's going to depend on how pampered he is. So if I prick you, so a delicate person experiences 50 units of pain, and a rough, tough cowboy type of person experiences 10 units of pain. Now, that's true whether the pampered person is very rich or very poor. He experiences 50 units of pain. Now, it happens to be that if the pampered person is very rich, he might be willing to spend $1 million not to experience those 50 units of pain. And if he's poor, he'll only pay $1,000. But if the goal of the Dmei Tsar is to figure out how to monetize his pain, so the answer is it's 50 units for both the rich person and the poor person. So that's why Rashi doesn't say in Kiyotze Vizeh how much it is. And maybe a little meduyuk for Rashi is because when it comes to Boshes, so it says in the Mishnah, Kol efi ha-mevayish v'ha-mezbayish. In other words, there clearly we take into account how wealthy he is, as Rashi explains later on. But here it just says, Adam Kiyoti Bezeh. But now, so what's the Rambam saying? So the Rambam, again, I think the Rambam, certainly the more Pashup Shad in Kiyoti Bezeh. Kiyoti Bezeh means we should look at all matters. But this might, again, go back to the question that we talked about before between Rashi and Rambam. Meaning to say, if you look at it as mammon, so then our goal is to go ahead, and this might not be mochrach, but it might work, our goal is to figure out how much this is worth. How much, you know, we have to monetize a unit of pain. But the fact is that we're going to look at units of pain. Whereas, if you're going to say, no, what's the Rambam saying? Rambam's saying we're not trying to figure out how much pain it is. Really, this is an onesh. The onesh happens to be, the Torah says, assess the onesh by how much this guy would be willing to pay or take so as not to be pained in this way. That's the means by which, but it's not what it's worth, right? Just like for ayin tachas ayin. It happens to be that the Torah says that this onesh is dmei eina. What is devaluation would be on the slave market. But that's not what it's worth. We're not saying anything about what it's worth. This guy is a ben chovin, he's not up for sale anyway. Which is, the Torah says, you have to pay this onesh. And the way we calculate this onesh is by saying, okay, the amount of the onesh for Nezek is what you'd be sold as a slave, the differential, and for Tsar, it's what you'd be willing to pay not to get this Tsar. So we look at what you would be, you know, what the Mazak would be willing to pay. Maybe we'll have to return to this question more when we talk about Tsar. But maybe, either way, it seems to be a very interesting machlokas here, and maybe it relates to their other point. Ripoy, hikal chayiv lirafoso, alubot smachim, imach masamaka chayiv, shalom mach masamaka pater. This seems to be obvious. Obviously, I don't have to pay you for refuah costs that I was not the cause of. So the Gemara is going to answer this question. It's going to say we must be talking about an issue here where it's not so clear, and therefore the Mishnah has to clarify. Likewise, Chaisa Nistera, Chaisa Nistera, Chayv L'Rafoso, Chaisa Kol Tzorka, Eino Chayv L'Rafoso, because again, he's not seen as the cause, and we'll see in the Gemara exactly what the Chiddush here is. And there must be some chiddush. It's obvious that if you got fully better and then got injured for some other cause, you're not going to have to pay. There must be some chiddush here. Shaves rano so kilu shomer kishuin shekvar nasan lo d'mei yado v'd'mei raglo. So what does that mean? That means as follows: if what's Demay? Demay, let's give our example, you know, the person, the pitcher, gets his hand chopped off, okay? So Nezek comes out to be $40 million. $40 million of Nezek. So now, it doesn't make sense to also pay him Sheves of his actual salary, right? Which is whatever it is, $8 million a year, because that lost future wages were already included in the Nezek, right? For those of you who study finance. So we're trying to figure out his present value, and the present value is calculated based off of all future income, right? That's really what Nezek seeks to capture. Nezek seeks to capture his present value, which of course takes into account the expected future earnings. So if we were to also pay for Sheves, meaning to say the money he would have earned and now he's missing because he's out of work, so that was already included in Nezek. So what's left for Sheves? The answer is very simple. So this guy goes ahead, he originally makes a $5 million a year pitching. Now, what's he going to do now that he's not pitching? He's going to be a Shomer Kishuim, right? That's all, and all a baseball player could really do, presumably without his hand. Shomer Kishuim, okay? So that's like a minimum wage job. So, you know, he was on college and an athletic scholarship. It's not like there's too many other options. So, okay, so he's going to be a Shomer Kishuim. So, but the problem is that actually for the next 3 months, he can't even be a Shomer Kishuim because he's in the hospital. He's not able to even work as a Shomer Kishuim. So in that case, we have to pay him 3 months' wages as a Shomer Kishuim in addition to Nezek, because that's not included in Nezek. Now, what's interesting is you could have said, no, let's just go ahead and, you know, it should be included in Nezek because the market should take that into account. The market should take into account the fact that as an Eved, so he's basically being sold as a Shomer Kishuim, but he's also not going to be able to work for 3 months, right? If he could start work, let's say his value as a Shomer Kishuim is now, you know, for the rest of his life is $500,000. But that's if he could start now. If he's going to be out of work for the next 3 months, so it's not going to be $500,000, it's going to be $495,000. He's going to miss $5,000 of work. So why do we need to go ahead? Right? Now, presumably, since you are paying Sheves, what are we doing? We're not saying, what's he worth now? What are we doing? We're saying, what would he sell for after he's healed, right? What would he sell for if he was ready to work tomorrow? If he was ready to work for tomorrow, he would sell for $500,000. Originally sold for $40 million. So the Nezek is $39,500. And then we say, 3 months of Shomer Kishuim work is $5,000. So you pay him $39,555,000 for Nezek plus Sheves, right? That's how it comes out. So there's a much more straightforward way of doing this. Let's just go ahead and figure out what he would, instead of saying, what's he going to be worth after he gets better, and then calculating how much time it's going to take him to get better, and the wage of that middle period, and then adding it all together, right? And the same thing, by the way, is true for Ripoy. In other words, we're going to pay him for Ripoy, right? So the Ripoy of this is going to be is another $100,000 to get his arm fixed up, surgery and everything. It's $100,000. Now, when we're calculating the Nezek, so we're saying how much would he sell as an Eved? So presumably, we're saying how much would he sell as an Eved post-Refuah, even though he's pre-Refuah. Because if we say how much is he going to sell as an eved now, and then we say you have to pay for ripoy separately, and you have to pay for sheves separately, so he's basically paying twice. He's paying because his value is going to be diminished, because anybody who buys him is going to have to worry about the fact that he's not working for the next 3 months, plus has to worry about his medical costs. So we're seem to be making this like needlessly complicated by basically saying, okay, ripoy, shevet, I mean, tsar, and boshes, I understand, they don't affect your price, your cost, when you're being sold as an eved. So those are definitely should be dealt with separately. Those are all about an incident that took place in the past. They don't have an effect on your present value. But shebes and ripoy both have an effect on your present value. So what we're doing is, practically, we're saying, let's take those out of the equation, figure out his value as an eved, if you were theoretically healed, plus ready to work, which is like, instead of saying, what would he sell for, we say, what would you theoretically sell for if two things were different about you? Then we calculate those two things differently, and then we add it all together, and we pay. So that's like a very needlessly complicated way to do this. It would be much simpler to take him to the slave market and say, what do you sell for originally? What do you sell for now? What's the difference? And that difference includes nezek, ripoy, sheves, and then boshes, and sorry, not boshes, nezek, it's, yeah, and boshes and tsar will calculate separately. That's what I would have thought. So that's not what we do. So the answer, presumably, is that's gufa the chiddush of rakshiv to yitain to rapoy rape. And the reason for that is probably because the refuah that a adon will give this eved is not going to be top-level refuah. We'll see later on in the Gemara that you can't just get any old doctor from out of town. You have to get a good doctor. He charges him for his actual medical costs. And likewise, when it comes to sheves, most likely the market is not that efficient that it will calculate the full extent of sheves, right? Let's give an example. Let's say I'm selling my house for $750,000. Now, let's imagine that, we come to an agreement, $750,000, and I say to the buyer, you know what? I'm not going to move out for another 2 weeks because my new house won't be ready. It's fine. Now, do we go ahead? Well, calculate. Well, what is rent in this house? Rent in this house is $4,000. 2 weeks is $2,000. Let's make it go down to $748,000. The market is not that efficient. It's not perfect market. This is one of the things that economists have recently realized in the last 30, 40 years. And you'll see it's a theme that comes up again and again in Perek HaChovel. It's remarkable, actually. The Nobel Prize in Economics for a couple years ago came up from an Einfeld that's mefurish in our Gemara. We'll get there. But anyway, so the point is that would not... So when the Torah says you have to pay for ripoy and sheves, the Torah is saying we're going to make sure that that is fully compensated for. And we're going to do that by actually going ahead and saying ripoy, not what the adon would devalue you in terms of your value on the slave market, but what are your actual medical costs. Memela, once you're going to be compensated for your actual medical costs, we have no choice but to take that away from the nezek and imagine what you would be worth after you were healed. And likewise, to fully compensate you for your lost labor in the months that you're out, we're going to go ahead and not just say theoretically the differential in terms of your value on the slave market, but what actually you would make if you were working and now you're not working as a Shomer Kishuim for the next 3 months. And then, since the Torah said, oh, you have to pay sheves and ripoy fully, we have no choice but to take that out of the nezek and imagine what your nezek would be after you were calculated. And that's part of that scoop of the chiddush. Okay, fine. Boshes hakol lefi amivayish v'amizbayish. Let's see, Rashi on that. Hakol lefi Actually, we skipped Rashi on Sheves. Sheves kol yimei acholi roin oso ki'ilu hu shomer kishuim v'nosin s'chiraso shol kol yom. Sharei ein roi l'malacha kveida filu b'lo choli sharei nikto yado v'raglo v'hu kvar nasan lo demehem. Akol lefi ha'mevayish adam kal shebi'e ishboshto miruba. Sort of interesting, you know. I would have thought a little bit the opposite. If a chashuv person embarrasses you, it's more embarrassing, but that's presumably taken into account. It's also more of a bizayon to be embarrassed by an adam kal. Adam is bayish. Adam chashuv shen is bayish. Boshto meruba. V'kulu chamisha dvarim. Mikra nafki. How do we know? Nezek. Dechsev ayin tachas ayin. How do we know? Tsar. Because it says petza tachas patza. Dachi darshinan begemar. Rashi writes dachi darshinan begemar because, as opposed to the other ones, which are more or less mefurish bekra, ayin tachas ayin, again, you might have thought it's mamish, but once we know it's mamon, it's mefurish bekra. And ribui v'sheves rak shivto yitin v'arpo yirape. So that's also mefurish. Boshes tichsiv v'katzosas kapa mamon. Again, once we know it's mamon, it's mefurish. Whereas tsar, so he writes mefurish begemara because Petza tachas patza doesn't have anything to do with tsar. But the Gemara is going to darshan. Well, why do you need to say petza tachas patza? It's redundant. And from there we learn tsar. Now, that's very good, except that's actually not what the Gemara uses it for. The Gemara learns out from petza tachas patza that you pay tsar b'makom nezek. Actually, it seems like the real source for tsar is probably kviya tachas kviya, and especially true for Rashi, so that's an issue. But I think we'll get back to that on the Gemara, on Daf Pehe and Aleph, and look for the sources for these things. Over here at the bottom, Pei Dalet. But for now, just, I guess, remember this Rashi, that Rashi learns out that the Makor for Tzar is Petz Tachas Batza. Okay. Gemara. Amai. How do we know you pay Nezek? Ayin Tachas Ayin Am Rachmana. Ema ayin mamish. What's the pashtus? How do you understand this Gemara? Is it ema ayin mamish meaning say it could go both ways? Maybe you could say mama, maybe you could say mamish. Or no, that's the pashtay dekra. So we'll see if this actually is going to make some differences. But this is l'chara machlokas between Tosfos and the Rambam. When we read the Rambam, we'll see. Rambam thinks ayin tachas ayin could really go both ways. Okay, we know it's mama, not mamish, but whereas Tosfos, the bottom Tosfos Dimaschol Maka, and also Tosfos Dimaschol Ravashi on Pedal Ralef assumes that the Pashi Dekra is Ayin Tachas Ayin is Mamish. Mamish Ayin Tachas Ayin, Pakat Yirai. And we need these, whatever these drashos we're doing over here is Lathke Kram Pashte, as Tosfos is Lashon. Now, another very important question here is the following. What exactly are we doing in this Gemara? Eima ayin tachas ayin mamish. So the Rambam, in his Hakdama to Perashat Mishnayos, writes that the Gemara over here is never really had a havamina, that it's ayin tachas ayin mamish. That's halacha l'moshe misinai, or Perashat Mekubal, as we'll see shortly. And the Rambam echoes that in the Mishnah Torah as well, beginning with Chavul Mazik. That's Pashat, that Ayin Tachas Ayin is Mamo. So what are we doing over here? Why do we need these seven or eight drashos? The answer is we're looking for an Asmachta. The Rambam says the same thing is true for Arba Minim. We just learned Masechah Sukkah. So the Gemara, for all the Arba Minim, says, how do you know Priyetz Hadar is an Esrog? Maybe it's a Rimon. Maybe it's something else, that eight times eight, it's pilpulin. And the Gemara goes through all sorts of sources. So the Rambam writes, no, how do we know an esrog is an esrog? How do we know Priyetz Hadar is an esrog? Halach l'moshe misinai. What's the Gemara doing? It's looking for an asmachtas. There are two types of asmachtas, the Rambam says. One type of asmachta is a din derabanan, that we look for an asmachta in the pasuk for the din derabanan remains derabanan. What's the asmachta? It's an illusion. Rambam writes the purpose of the illusion is some type of mnemonic device, help you remember the halachos as they come along, you know, when you're doing reading the psukim. And another type of asmachta is the same similar type of point, help you remember the halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, or the Perish Mekubal. The difference between Perish Mekubal and halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, we'll get to that later in the Rambam, is that when it comes to halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, there's no ultimately source in the pasuk, like Shiurim, Kazayas. Whereas Perish Mekubal is the interpretation of a pasuk that you only know through Kabbalah, like Ayin Tachas Ayin being Mamo. That's what Mekubal is, and Kabbalah is in tradition, we know that. Now, how did the Rambam know that? Rambam knows that because the Gemara takes for granted a certain conclusion, and there's no debate whatsoever, right? We never had a Havamina that Priyetz Adar isn't Esrog. We never had a Havamina that Ayin Tachas Ayin is literal. We start, the Mishnah says it, and we write the source. The Gemara is simply asking, how do you know? And when it comes to something like that, where there's never any Havamina at all, then that's okay. That's an indication that that's what's going on. Whereas when you have a machlokas, so then there's no, or the Gemara seems to be unsure what actually is the din. So that shows that there is no Misora, and then we'll assume that even when we bring drashos, those drashos are not drashos according to Rambam that we had a Misora for, but we made up. That could still mean it's a din d'oraisa, made up using rules, not out of thin air. But it's not something that we had a Misora for. We knew the conclusion, and then we're just trying to find the source. And that might explain why some of these drashos are a little stronger and weaker than others. Why the Rambam himself, when he tries to show it, doesn't actually bring the Gemara source. He makes up his own ones. Why might explain why we start off with Tanayim and then having Amorayim, though that might not be Mukhrach. You have to look to other places that aren't Asmachtas. We might have that. But that sort of explains the whole order of presentation of the Gemara. The Pashtus and Tosfos and Sukkah by the Arba Minim is that actually it's we're looking for a real source. Doesn't mean we didn't know it, but we're still looking for a real source, and this constitutes a real source, like other types of drashos. And also that's the mashmos of Tosfos over here, as we'll see, right? Like the bottom line in Tosfos. Yishlom Adarav Alatayme, the Darsh Ayin Tachas Ayin, Mamon Mikra Achrina. In other words, questions, what do you do with Makamaka? Makamaka is used for this, or it's used for that, so if you learn it for there, it's not for this. The Tosfos seems to be consistent in Bava Kamma and in Sukkah, seeing these Gemaras as regular types of drashas for dinim, as we do every other time. We don't have too much time left, but let's at least start the Gemara. Lo salkadai techtetanya, yachol simas eno, mesame eno, kiteas yado, mekateas yado, shivers raglo, mishabers raglo. Tamad lomar, maka adam, umaka behema, umama maka behema letashlumen, af, maka adam letashlumen. Vim nafshach lomar, hari yomar lo sikhu kofer, lenefshot seyach, asher rashalamus, lenefshot seyach yatalokeach kofer, avalatalokeach kofer, lerosh evarim she'ein chosrim. So, originally we learned it out from Maka, which is going to be some type of Gzer Shava. The Gemara will explain what that is exactly. Vimnaf Shachlomar. So there's something wrong with this Gzer Shava, some objection, and therefore there's an alternative source. Osichu Kofer Lenefesh Rotzeach. So when it comes to Ritzicha, the Torah says you kill somebody, you can't pay Kofer to get out of it. But anything less than Ritzicha, like Rosh Eivarim Shein and Chosrin, so then you do pay kofar kamash malan. So it's interesting because our mission is talking about not just Rosh Eivarim Shein and Chosrin, it's presumably Yechayv and Chamish and Dvarim for anything. But it's not true because Nezek is only going to be for something that's Eino Chozer. In other words, the Pashup Shad is, we'll see this later, but if it's something that's Chozer, so you might pay Sheves, but not Nezek. Right? So it's only Nezek that's Einan Chosrin. And for there, you might have thought that you pay Kofar. sorry, you might have thought that you got your hand chopped off. Kamash Malan, no, you pay kofar. So as we noted before, and I guess this will be our last point, that the nature of these two drashos might imply two very different models for understanding nezek. Is nezek more like tashlumin of what happens when you would damage an animal, which is clearly tashlumin, or is it more like kofar, a penalty, an onesh, and the like? And as again you saw, Rambam and other Rishonim disagree about this point. Okay, so we'll stop here. There's a lot to talk about these Rambams, but for the rest of the Gemara, it's going to go relatively quickly. And again, for tomorrow's Shir, I'd like to not just finish all these Gemaras, it might be a little unrealistic, but also to start the new Gemara on the Hochamra de Katayada de Nuka. So again, we're going to focus on the rest of the Gemara tomorrow, the Rambams, which you saw today, but we didn't get to focus on, and hopefully even at least begin the next sugya. Okay.